Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, Human Anatomy, and it is November 7th. And we still have one class to take the third practicum today. So we're looking at the schedule on the right-hand side over here. And then we're going to have a heart lecture today. So we're going to start talking about the heart. And then next week, we're going to have lecture exam number 3. But don't forget, Monday is a holiday. We meet on Mondays, but not next Monday, or this coming Monday, because it's a holiday. So you get to study extra for exam number 3. Here are the chapters that are on exam 3, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. And we've covered all those chapters already. You might notice that for endocrine system or chapter 17, you don't have a weekly module for it in Blackboard. But there is a study guide in Blackboard, so it tells you what exam figures you should know and what end of chapter questions are good, and that's where I'm going to get some questions for the lecture exam, right? Plus anything that we talked about in lecture. Okay, anybody have any questions regarding the schedule of festivities? No? Okay, so let's start talking about the heart, unless somebody else has an announcement. For some reason, I think there's something else I should mention, but I forgot. Oh yeah, all the lectures, they should be online and available to you. Okay, so, and then I'll put this lecture up online later this week, probably Friday. All right, so we're going to start talking about the heart, and here you see the heart. What cavity is the heart in? That's kind of a loaded question because it could be in any number of different cavities. But it could be, what's the largest cavity that the heart is in? Okay, how about ventral cavity? Ventral cavity, and then there's a subcavity of the ventral cavity, which is the thoracic cavity. And then there's a subcavity of the thoracic cavity, which is the mediastinum, which is right in the center between the right and left lungs. And then there's a subcavity of the mediastinum. It is the pericardial cavity, right? Or the myocardial cavity. So that's where the heart is, and we can see it within the thoracic cavity. You can see it. It's in this behind this armor plating that we call ribs and the sternum. And this is sort of an interesting structure because y'all know from just watching movies that your heart is not right smack in the middle of your body. What side is it on, mostly? It's mostly on the left side. Okay, so you can see most of the heart is on the left side. And it starts right smack in the middle, but then as you move through the heart, it goes over to the left side of the body. So we can think of the heart as a triangle. Do you see a triangular shaped structure right here? And so here's the base of the triangle, or a pyramid, that's the broad part, and then here's the tip. And the tip of a triangle we call the apex, and so we call this the apex of the heart over here, and the top part, the base. So here's the base and here's the apex. And as we move from the base of the heart down toward the apex, right, so if we start right in the middle of the base, you're right on midline, and as you move to the apex, then you have to move to the left. So the heart is angulated. Even though you have one heart, it's not right smack in your middle of your body. The base is, but as you go from base to apex, it angles over to the left, and so you have a lot of your heart over on the left side of your body. That's why your left lung is a little bit smaller than your right lung. But that's not the only thing. Okay, as you go from base to apex, not only does it move over to the left, it also moves anteriorly. It starts to stick out of your body. So the apex is the most superficial part of the heart. And it's actually bouncing up against your thoracic wall, up against your ribs, and you can feel that point where you can feel that point that the apex as it's bouncing up against the chest wall right there, and it's called the point of maximal impulse. So everybody's heart is in a little bit different location, and if you want to find out exactly where one of your patients' heart is at or your heart is, palpate for that PMI, and you can actually tell exactly where the heart is to do an imaging study or put on electrodes for an ECG or whatever. Okay. So that's the heart, the base apex, the biaxial tilt, right? So if you go from base to apex, it tilts over to the left, but it also tilts anteriorly. And it produces that PMI, point of maximal impulse. There is something else on the heart that is a real important landmark. So let's look at this illustration of the heart. So here is clearly labeled the apex of the heart. Here is the base of the heart. And there is a sulcus on the heart. There's actually a couple of sulci on the heart, but one that's a very important landmark that you can see from across the room, and it's called the anterior longitudinal sulcus. What the heck is a sulcus? What's another name for a sulcus in anatomy? It's called a groove, right? A fissure is a really deep indentation in a structure, but a groove is relatively shallow, but it's still a depression. So you can call this the anterior longitudinal groove, but people call it a sulcus, and that depression is filled with pericardial fat, which is kind of white or yellow color, and the myocardium or the muscle fibers themselves are red, so there's really nice contrast between the anterior sulcus and the myocardium, so it's easy to see. It stands out very nicely. Also in that depression are some important coronary blood vessels, and we're going to take a look at those. So this is the three most important things that you should know about the heart. So when you look at a heart, you might start to get confused, and there are three things that will get you straightened out right away. The first thing is find the apex. That's the pointy end. Find the base, and then find the anterior longitudinal sulcus, right? And then you know exactly how the heart is positioned. So what side of the heart is the anterior longitudinal sulcus on? Yeah, it's on the anterior side, so that makes that really, really easy. So when we look at this heart that's on this illustration, it's as if you're looking at my heart. You're facing me, you're looking at my heart. So on the left-hand side of the heart over here where the cursor is, all right, so I'm raising my hand. What side is that? That's left, right? So here's the left side of the heart. Here's the right side of the heart, just as if you were looking at me. Here's my right hand, here's my left hand. So that will keep you from getting twisted around and confused. So know the apex, base, and anterior longitudinal sulcus. And if you know those three things, then you know the top, the bottom, the anterior side, and the posterior side, the right side, left side. Everything just kind of falls together if you know that. Okay. The sulcus right here, as you go from base to apex, notice that it doesn't go straight down perpendicularly from the base. There are other sulci that contain pericardial fat and blood vessels, but notice that they go down perpendicular from the base down to the apex. The only one that kind of wraps around the heart like a candy cane stripe or a barbershop stripe is this anterior longitudinal sulcus. So it's a relatively easy landmark to see, and all important because that's how you're going to get straightened out on the heart. Okay. So those are the first things that we wanted to talk about here. All right, some other anatomical terms. The pericardium, right? It's a sac that surrounds the heart, suspends the myocardium. It anchors the heart within the mediastinum. It protects the heart, and it even protects overfilling a little bit because when you overstretch a muscle, it gets weak, and you don't want your heart to get weak because it fills up with too much blood. So we're going to look at these different layers of the pericardium. So let me get this out, layers of the heart. Okay, so we can see the pericardium right here within the mediastinum, and it's cut, right? And then we're going to learn the layers of the heart and layers of the pericardium. So here is the heart, and you can see the angulation going over to the left. What part of the heart is this right here? That's the apex, and then the base is up over here. Okay, so you notice that the heart has some chambers. We're going to look at the chambers real soon after we look at the layers. So the pericardium is the layer that is superficial on the heart. The myocardium is a layer that is made up of muscle tissue. Right, so most of the heart is myocardium because it's a muscle. And then there's another layer on the inside of the heart that we call the endocardium. So you've got pericardium on the outside, endocardium on the inside, and in the middle you have the myocardium. Those are the three main layers that make up the heart. And which of those three layers has muscle tissue? The myocardium. And what kind of tissue is that? What kind of muscle is that? That's cardiac. Yeah, it's cardiac muscle, right? So I know it sounded like a trick question, but I didn't mean it to be trick. What other kinds of muscles do you have in your body? Skeletal and smooth, right? So it's only one of those three kinds. So it's cardiac muscle. And you should have in your mind what cardiac muscle looks like. It's short, it's branched, it's striated. So that's a feature that it has with skeletal muscle. Okay. All right, so let's look at that pericardium, the layer on the outside of the heart. This shows you all of the layers that we were talking about. Okay, so here's the heart chamber. Here is the endocardium. Here is the myocardium. And then here is a part of the epicardium. And remember, this is a visceral organ, and it's in the pericardial cavity, and that cavity is not open to the outside world. Can you tell me the name, the general class name for a membrane that lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world, as opposed to a cavity that is open to the outside world, like your oral cavity, nasal cavity? Okay. You should think of two kinds of membranes. Okay, there is a mucous membrane and a serous membrane. This is a blast from the past. Mucous membrane lines a cavity that's open to the outside world, and a serous membrane lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world. And the cavity that your heart is in, of course, should not be open to the outside world. It should be nice and protected. So there's a serous membrane around the heart that we call the pericardium. Now, what was one thing about a serous membrane? It's not just a simple membrane. How many parts does a serous membrane have? It's got three parts. It's got a parietal division, a visceral division, and in between those two divisions, there is a serous space filled with serous fluid. So let's translate that to the heart. So here is the surface of the heart. This is the epicardium. This is what we call the visceral pericardium because it's actually touching the heart. Here is the pericardial cavity filled with serous fluid. And then here is the parietal pericardium right here. All right, so the parietal is the one that's superficial. The visceral membrane of a serous membrane is deep, and in between the two we have a cavity filled with serous fluid. So that serous fluid helps suspend the heart a little bit, and it also absorbs a lot of shock because when the heart contracts, it's actually a very violent contraction, so it helps reduce friction. And because the heart is kind of heavy and blood is kind of heavy, there is an additional part of the pericardium in addition to the typical three divisions of a serous membrane. Right? There is a thick membrane that's superficial to the parietal layer of the pericardium, and we call that the fibrous pericardium. So I can see the fibrous pericardium right here. So the pericardium has got these four layers: a thick fibrous pericardium, the parietal division, the a pericardial cavity, and the epicardium right on the surface of the heart, okay, the visceral pericardium. So epicardium and visceral pericardium are exactly the same structure. Maybe I'll say that again. The epicardium, which is considered a layer of the heart, the epicardium and the visceral pericardium is exactly the same layer, but it's in those names are generated from two different classification schemes. One is from layers of the heart, and the other is layers of a serous membrane. So it shouldn't be too hard, I think, for you to appreciate that. Okay, so those are the membranes that make up the heart. And the heart is a pump, right? It's a muscular pump. It contracts, and when it contracts, it pumps blood. So it's a lot different than a lot of pumps that maybe you have at home, which are driven by electric motors, which continuously pump blood. The heart doesn't continuously pump blood. Sometimes when it contracts, it's pumping, and then when the muscle relaxes, it stops pumping. But that's an important phase of the heart too, because what happens when the heart relaxes? When the heart relaxes, that's when it fills up with blood. If the heart never relaxed, it was always just contracted, then it could never pump anything, even though it was contracted, because there'd be no blood inside the heart. So that pumping phase that we call systole or contraction is important. That's what maintains your blood pressure and pumps blood through your body. But the relaxation phase or diastole is just as important, and it's got to be long enough so that the heart can actually fill with blood. So that when it does contract, what is it pushing? Pushing blood in the rest of your body. All right, so there are chambers inside the heart, and I want you to know how many chambers there are. Okay, somebody might know, but we'll go over this a bunch of times. Anybody know how many chambers there are in the heart? You could just say it out loud. Four. It's really important for you to say it out loud for one of the reasons coming up in just a little bit. Yeah, so there are four chambers. There are two superior chambers that I see on this diagram, and this is a fantastic diagram that you should study a bunch. All right? There's two on the top, the superior part, and these are called atria. They're not very strong pumps. Here is the right atrium. Here is the left atrium. We'll even go over this in lab next week, too. All right, so you have two atria, right and left. And then inferior to the atria are ventricles. And you can see the muscle wall of the ventricles a lot thicker. So these are the chambers that pump blood through your lungs and through the rest of your body. These are the strong pumps. And these are what we call ventricles. And again, there are two. There's a right and left ventricle. So those are the four chambers. RA, okay, LA, and then the RV and the LV. Right here, for left ventricle, right atrium, and right atrium. Okay, so those are the four chambers of the heart. And you notice that there are arrows on this diagram, and that signifies the blood flow through the heart and through some blood vessels that we see on this diagram right here. Okay, so these arrows show that blood sometimes is moving away from the heart, and we want to define this kind of blood vessel. And I don't want you to look at color. I know you guys see colors really, really well, but I don't want you to look at colors. I just want you to look at where these arrows are pointing. Is this arrow here pointing away from the heart or toward the heart?
Away
from the heart. Okay, it just so happens it's a red vessel. Here's another blood vessel. And which way are these arrows pointing? Away from the heart. So this one, even though it's blue, has the same sort of name as this one because the arrows are pointing away from the heart, even though one is blue and one is red. A blood vessel that is taking blood away from the heart, by definition, is what we call an artery. And it doesn't matter what the state of blood is in that blood vessel. It just means the direction. An artery always takes blood away from the heart, irrespective of what kind of color that blood is. Okay, so I see two arteries right here. Then I also see some other blood vessels, and which way are the arrows pointing? Toward the heart, bringing blood into the heart. And any kind of blood vessel that takes blood into the heart or returns blood to the heart, we're going to call that a vein. Some of these veins are red colored, some of them are blue colored. That has significance, but not in terms of whether it's an artery or a vein. So don't be confused on that point. The third kind of blood vessel is these that form this mesh or this network. These are what we call capillaries. And this is an important functional part of the cardiovascular system because this is the only place where substances can enter or leave the cardiovascular system. Things can only enter or leave the blood in capillaries. So I see one capillary bed or network in the lungs, and then I see another capillary network down here in the rest of the body. So if we think of the heart, okay, and I see two different colors right here. How many different sides does a heart have? If we just look at this by color. It's got two. It's got a left side and a right side. So we see that it has four chambers, but only two sides, a right and left. And then how many capillary beds are there? There are two. Okay, and so the reason why the heart has two sides, because there are two circulations that are important. So the heart is not one pump, it's actually two pumps. One pump pumps blood through the pulmonary circulation, which is just through the lungs, and then the other circulation, starting with the left ventricle, pumps blood to the rest of the body. So the heart has two sides, and it supports two circulations. The systemic circulation goes to the whole body. The pulmonary circulation goes just to the lungs. Right, and it's the right side of the heart that pumps blood to the lungs, and it's the left side that pumps blood to the rest of your body. What side of the heart do you think has a tougher job? Which side of the heart has to do more work? The one that pumps blood just through the lungs, or the side of the heart that has to pump blood through your whole body? Your whole body. And indeed, you're going to see that in lab and on some of these figures. The left ventricle is much more powerful than the right ventricle. And as a result, for instance, if you were to walk around all day with a weight in your right arm and do a curl, an exercise that brachialis and biceps brachii all day long, and then ignore your left arm, what would be the difference between your right and left arm? Your right would get really big and your left arm would just stay the same size. Same thing for the heart. Since the left ventricle is pumping a lot of blood, it gets bigger and stronger as a result. Okay, so think of two circulations because the heart has two different sides. And let's review. How many chambers does a heart have?
Four.
And you see that there's a certain kind of circulatory pattern through the heart, signified by these arrows. And these arrows only point in one direction because there's only one arrowhead. You never see another arrowhead over here. So that says that blood flows in one direction, never backwards. Because if blood flows backwards, then that defeats the purpose of the heart. And sometimes somebody has a condition where blood flows backwards in the heart, and that eventually will kill the heart when that happens. All right, so you could think of what's easier to do, walk up these stairs all day long or walk up a sand dunes all day long? What's anybody walk up a sand dunes at all? Like on a beach, a hill that's made out of sand? It's pain because you take a step up and what happens? You slide back down. Then you take another step, and what happens? You slide back down. So walking up a sand dunes is like 100 times as much work as just walking upstairs, because every time you walk upstairs, you gain some ground, right? So if the heart has what we call retrograde flow or backward flow through it, then the heart is like running up a sand dunes all day long, and it just runs out. It just dies as a result of that. Not immediately, but eventually it will fail. Okay, so there are things inside the heart that prevent the backward flow of blood. Anybody know what those things are called? Those are valves. That's right. So the heart has very important valves to make sure that blood flows only in the direction that you see here in the pulmonary and systemic circulation. So we see that the atria receive blood from veins, and the ventricles then receive blood from the atria, and then the ventricle pumps blood into arteries that carry through the pulmonary circulation or systemic circulation. And blood should only flow in that direction. Should never flow from the left ventricle into the right ventricle or from the right ventricle into the right atrium. Okay. All right, so there are valves. So how many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
How many valves does the heart have?
Two.
Okay. I didn't think anybody would really know, but it's really easy to remember because it's exactly the same as the number of chambers. So how many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
How many valves does the heart have?
Four.
Exactly the same. So we got to know where those valves are. Okay, you know where the chambers are now. So here's the right side of the heart. Here's the left side. Right side pumps blood through the pulmonary circulation. The left side pumps it through the systemic circulation. Here are the two atria, which are superior. Here are the two ventricles, the left ventricle and right ventricle, which are inferior. Now what about valves? Between the atria and the ventricles, there are valves. And I see a little trapdoor here and a little trapdoor right here. When the atria contract, it pumps blood into the ventricles. Okay, and then when the atria relax, blood wants to flow back from a ventricle into an atrium, but it can't because there is a valve right here. And we call this an atrioventricular valve. Remember, in anatomy, we can take two terms, put them together with an O between them. And so this is an atrioventricular valve because it's between an atrium and a ventricle. And on what side of the heart is it? It's on the right side, yep. So here is the right atrioventricular valve. It has a name, okay, and I'll tell you what that is in just a second. Because I want to go to the left side of the heart. Here's another atrioventricular valve, right? Because here is the left atrium, here's the left ventricle. When the atria contracts, it pumps blood into the left ventricle, and then it's going to want to flow back into an atrium, but it should not be allowed to do that because this valve is going to close, this little trap door right here. This is the left atrioventricular valve. And it just so happens, you can't see it on this diagram, but in lab you're going to notice this, that these trapdoors right here form a leaflet, a valve leaflet or a cusp in a valve, and there are three on the right side of the heart, and there are two on the left side of the heart. So since the morphology is different, the structure of these valves is different, we name them differently. Since this has three leaflets, we call this the tricuspid valve on the right side, and the left side is what we call the bicuspid valve. And you're going to see that in lab. Okay, tricuspid is always called the tricuspid, but the bicuspid valve sometimes runs around with another name, and they change the name in the same sentence. And another name for the bicuspid valve is the mitral valve, because it reminded somebody of somebody's really fancy hat. Like the Pope and cardinals and bishops wear this really fancy hat that has two parts to it, and they stick it on their head like that, and they kind of open it up, and that's called a mitre, right? So somebody said, well, that looked like a mitre, and so we're going to call that the mitral valve, And the mitre has those two sides to it, so the bicuspid valve and mitral valve are exactly the same thing. They're on the left side of the heart. All right, so how many valves did we talk about so far? Two, that's right. And how many should there be?
Four,
so there's two more that we're going to be interested in. Okay, so let's find those other two valves. Here is the right ventricle. When it pumps blood into the pulmonary artery. Whenever you hear this term pulmonary, you should think of what organ system?
Lungs.
Yeah, lungs right here. All right, so the right ventricle is going to pump blood to the lungs via the pulmonary arteries. When the ventricle contracts, it pushes a bunch of blood into the artery. When the ventricle relaxes, a lot of that blood is going to want to go back into the ventricle. But we don't want it to go back, right? Because then that would be like the heart running up sand dunes all day long. So guess what prevents the retrograde or backward flow of blood from a great artery like the pulmonary artery back into a ventricle like the right ventricle? A valve. And I see it right here. Okay, and this is nice because we know this is the pulmonary artery, so we call that the pulmonary valve. So pulmonary valve is another name for a valve. These things kind of look like half of a moon. There are three little flaps right here, and so these are called semilunar valves. A semilunar valve guards the entrance to a great artery coming off the base of the heart, so blood can't flow back into the heart. So that's a semilunar valve. Different than an atrioventricular valve. All right, so just as the pulmonary artery has a valve called the pulmonary, here is another valve, the fourth valve. And this is at the entrance to the aorta. So guess what we call that valve right there? We call that the aortic valve, exactly right. Okay, so the aortic valve is right between the left ventricle and the aorta. It's kind of hidden behind the pulmonary artery. Okay, so here is the aorta. And the aorta is an artery that feeds which circulation? How many circulations are there in the body? Yep, so there are two, systemic and pulmonary. And the aorta feeds blood to which circulation? The systemic. And what artery feeds blood to the pulmonary circulation? The pulmonary artery. Yep, so you just got to start using those terms, right? Talk to each other about it. And Skype each other, even. Talk about anatomy. I think that's important to do. All right, so how many chambers does a heart have?
Four.
How many valves does a heart have?
Four.
How many sides does a heart have? I tried to trick you. That's right. Heart only has two sides because there are two circulations, right? So the heart is actually two pumps in series, right, because there are two circulations right here. The other thing that you might notice on this illustration are these colors. I know you guys are sensitive to colors. I'm not so much, but I see red and blue, okay, and that has a significance. The red arteries are, or the red blood vessels, sorry, ooh, an artery can be blue or red, but a red blood vessel contains blood that is relatively high in oxygen. All right, so the aorta, is it relatively high in oxygen or low in oxygen? It's high because it's colored red, and indeed, one of the jobs of the aorta is to deliver oxygen to where? The systemic circulation, which goes all over your body. And that's where exchange takes place in these capillaries. Oxygen leaves, goes to oxygenate all the cells of your body. Those cells produce carbon dioxide, which is a waste product. And then carbon dioxide enters through this capillary, goes back to the heart. And since this color of this vein right here is blue, that signifies relatively low oxygen and relatively high carbon dioxide. So this vein coming back to the heart is called the vena cava, and it just means big cavernous vein. There's a superior vena cava and an inferior vena cava. We'll see how that fits together in just a little bit. It's bringing deoxygenated blood back to the heart. Heart doesn't want it, so it pumps that deoxygenated blood through the pulmonary circuit to the lungs, and in the lungs there's capillaries, and in your lungs then carbon dioxide can leave the blood, you exhale that out of your body, and what else do you do besides exhaling? You inhale, and what do you bring into your body when you inhale? Oxygen, which then turns this blood red, and so that's why here is a blood vessel bringing blood back to the heart. What do we call a blood vessel bringing blood back to the heart? That's a vein. So here is a vein that's colored red because it's coming back from the lungs. It's oxygenated blood. Right, so the pulmonary vein is oxygenated. The pulmonary artery is deoxygenated. The aorta is what? Oxygenated or deoxygenated? It is oxygenated. So here is an example of two arteries. One is deoxygenated and one is oxygenated. Just remember, what's the function of the lungs right here? It's for exchange so that oxygen can enter the blood. And when oxygen enters the blood, that's why this pulmonary vein is red colored. But how do we define an artery and a vein? I'm really kind of trying to hammer this home because it's easy to confuse. What is a vein? How would you define a vein? Brings blood back to the heart. Has no consequence whether it's oxygenated or deoxygenated, or red or blue on this diagram. And how do we define an artery? Takes blood away from the heart. Just like the aorta, that's an artery, and the pulmonary artery is an artery, but the pulmonary artery is relatively low in oxygen, okay? Because it's going to the lungs to pick up oxygen. So it sort of makes sense once you think about it. Okay, once you kind of clear that confusion out. All right, so those are the chambers and the valves. You have, so this is a good overall scheme of the cardiovascular system. You have some better illustrations that show a little bit better heart anatomy, which I think I want to look at right now. Here's a really important exam figure. All right, it's a little bit more complicated, but not too bad. But I see the four chambers, right? You believe there's four chambers in the heart? Indeed. I see the two sides. Here's the right side. Here's the left side. And what is this part of the heart down here called? That's the apex. And what is this part over here called? That's the base. So the atria are up by the base. And there are two sides of the heart. This is where I have the cursor. Is the, what side of the heart is this? Just like if you were to look at me. That's the right side. Here's the left side. So there are two chambers on the right, two on the left. We're on the left side. So here is the left atrium. Here is the left ventricle. Left atrium pumps blood into the left ventricle. And what prevents the retrograde flow? The mitral valve or bicuspid valve, because it has two of these leaflets right here. All right, that's on the left side. On the right side of the heart, here's the atrioventricular valve on the right side of the heart. We call that the tricuspid. Why is that? Because it has three of these things. We only see one on this illustration, but it has three of these leaflets. So it's the tricuspid. Now, how are we going to keep from getting confused on where the bicuspid and tricuspid are? I mean, sometimes just brute memory works really nice, but sometimes if you put a little trick in there, it's easier to remember. So as you're looking from, as you normally read from left to right, okay, you try before you buy. Okay? Try before you buy, if you can do that. You always test drive a car first, right before you spend $50,000 or whatever cars cost these days. Okay? All right, so tricuspid valve, bicuspid valve. What's another name for the bicuspid valve? Mitral valve. All right, then I also see the semilunar valves at the root of the great arteries leaving the heart. Here is the pulmonary semilunar valve, and here is the aortic semilunar valve. It's not labeled semilunar on this figure, but if you want to be exactly complete and correct, you would put semilunar in here. Okay, notice that the structure of these valves is quite different. The atrioventricular valves have these little tendons sticking off the margins of the leaflets. We call these chordae tendini. You're going to have to identify these things in lab, so look at the spelling. It's a really weird spelling for these terms. So spell it out on a blank piece of paper 10 or 20 times, right? So chordae is D-A-E and tendine is E-A-E at the end of the word. Pay close attention to that. All right, and make sure you have your reading glasses on so you can see that. The chordae tendine pull on the valve leaflets so that they don't invert. When the ventricles contract, they're very powerful, and these little leaflets would just flip up into the atria, and then blood would leak back up into the atria. These chordae tendine make sure that the leaflets touch each other and close, that they don't flop open like that. Otherwise, they would just flop back and forth. And the chordae tendine, what's attached to a tendon, typically? A bone on one side, and what's on the other side? A muscle. So you could think of the valve leaflet as a bone, on one side of these chorda tendineae, and the other side is a muscle, and it kind of looks like a fingertip, like a little fingertip sticking up right there. And these are what we call papillary muscles, because they reminded somebody of a little papillae, papillary muscles that hold on to these chorda tendineae to make sure that these valve leaflets don't invert and start to leak, because that would eventually kill the heart. All right, I see some other structures inside the ventricle, some other muscles, a little lattice work, a little network of muscles right here. These are not papillary muscles. How do you know these are not papillary muscles? Because they don't have any chorda tendineae attached to them. And they're not sticking up like a fingertip, but a really good thing to observe is that they don't have chorda tendineae on them. So these are just what we call trabeculi carni. All right, so trabeculi means a network or a mesh of muscles. And I see that in the left ventricle as well as the right ventricle. All right. And I don't see any trabeculi carni in the atria, but I do see some little muscles, especially in the right atrium. We call these pectinate muscles. All right. They're just little trabeculi. They're really small. I hope they're labeled. Are they labeled? Oh, yeah, pectinate muscles, little pectinate muscles. So we got some different kinds of muscles. There's a big, powerful, strong muscle separating the ventricles, and a piece of tissue that is making a wall is called a septum, like the nasal septum. Okay, this is called the interventricular septum between the ventricles. There's an interatrial septum between the atria. That atrium is relatively thin, just like the wall of the atria are thin because they only have to pump blood across an atrioventricular valve to get into a ventricle. All right, and if you look at the thickness of the left ventricle wall and compare it to the right ventricle wall, is it obvious which one is thicker? Which one is thicker, right ventricle or left ventricle? Left ventricle, because it's doing what? It's doing more work. It's pumping blood through your whole body. So that's a nice dead giveaway in lab and also labeling this exam figure that this is the left side of the heart, pumping blood into the systemic circulation via the aorta. And the right ventricle only pumps blood via the pulmonary artery to the lung. So it has a much easier life. And as a consequence, it doesn't get as strong or as hypertrophied. Okay, other things that we see on this slide. We see the pulmonary artery. That's the most anterior great vessel coming off the base of the heart. So you should write that down. Write that down maybe about 10 times. The most anterior vessel coming off the base of the heart is the pulmonary artery or pulmonary trunk. It's a big, strong, thick artery. It's going to look a lot like the aorta because in lab, the heart models that we have and the actual hearts we have are not color-coded red and blue. So it's easy to see the aorta and the pulmonary artery on this illustration, but they're both going to be colored the same in lab. So you're going to be able to recognize them is that the most anterior one is the pulmonary artery. The one posterior to it is the aorta. And it's going to be easy to confuse the pulmonary with the aorta. But you're just always going to remember the first vessel that you see when you look at the anterior side of the heart is the pulmonary artery right here. All right, then we got the ascending part of the aorta. We've got the arch of the aorta, which we'll probably talk about next week or week after when we get into blood vessels. All right, so here is the aorta. Which way is it taking blood? This aorta right here. To the heart or away from the heart? Away from the heart. So what is it, an artery or a vein? It's an artery because it's taking blood away from the heart. And it's red colored, which means it is relatively high in oxygen. Here is the pulmonary trunk. It's blue colored, which means what? Which means that it is low in oxygen, high in CO2, and which way is it taking blood? Away from the heart. So is it an artery or a vein? It's an artery, even though it's blue colored. All right, it's a little tricky, so you got to see that. Once you see it, it's easy to know, but until you see it, it could be a little confusing, right? So the aorta and pulmonary trunk are both arteries taking blood away from the heart, and there are valves that make sure that blood never goes from this artery back into a ventricle. Those are the semilunar valves. Here's the pulmonary semilunar valve. Here's the aortic semilunar valve. Okay. So don't be too intimidated with the heart. I want you to enjoy the heart. It's a really fascinating organ, so just spend a little time with it so all these things just kind of fall out of your mind and mouth very easily. All right, so how does blood get back to the heart? What kind of blood vessel brings blood back to the heart? A vein, that's right. And we got some blue ones and some red ones right here. From the systemic circulation, we see these inferior vena cava and the superior vena cava bringing blood back to the right atrium from everywhere in your body. The superior vena cava drains blood back to the heart from the level of the heart and above, like your shoulders, your neck, your head, your brain, right? Jugular feeds blood into the superior vena cava. The inferior vena cava drains blood back to the heart from everywhere else, below the level of the heart. So these are big, huge, cavernous veins, and hence their name, vena cava, right here. They attach to the right atrium. Okay, the right ventricle pumps blood via the pulmonary arteries to the lungs, and then that blood comes back from the lungs, nice and oxygenated, right, because it goes to the lungs to pick up oxygen. So here we have blood vessels bringing blood back to the heart from the lungs, and we call those pulmonary veins, right? And they're oxygenated blood, and you see they're color-coded. There are four of them. There are two left pulmonary veins and then two right pulmonary veins bringing blood both back to the left atrium right here. All right, so that's kind of pretty much everything in the heart. What did I forget to talk about? Not too much. Other than I see a little blood vessel down over here, but it looks really big. This is a continuation of the aorta. All right, so we see the arch of the aorta. So let's go over all the pieces of the aorta, even though we can't see them. Here's the ascending part of the aorta, the arch of the aorta, and then that produces a 180-degree bend in the aorta. So then here is the descending part behind the heart that we can't see, but I see a little bit of it peeking out over here. So here is descending aorta, and it's within the thoracic cavity. So this is the thoracic division of the descending aorta. And that's going to go through the diaphragm. Once this aorta goes through the diaphragm, what body cavity is it in? Not shown on this diagram, so you've got to have some kind of picture in your mind. The abdominal cavity, that's right, because the diaphragm separates the thoracic cavity from the abdominal cavity. And once that aorta gets into the abdominal cavity, we can't call it the thoracic aorta anymore because it's not in the thoracic cavity. What would we call that? That's the abdominal aorta. So the thoracic aorta and the abdominal aorta are all part of the descending aorta, but they're in just different body cavities. All right, let me look at the word slide to see what I skipped. Nothing. We're doing good so far. All right, so how many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
How many valves?
Four.
Okay, how many sides?
Two.
Good, you're doing good. All right, the transmural layers of the heart. I think that's on this illustration right here too. Remember, bone, what's the membrane on the outside of a bone called? Periosteum. What's the membrane on the inside of a bone called? Endosteum. So that same sort of nomenclature is used here. The epicardium is on the outside of the heart. The endocardium is on the inside of the heart. And the myocardium is the layer in the middle that's made up of cardiac muscle, the contractile cells. Okay, the endocardium is a really smooth membrane, smooth and slippery because blood is flowing over it all the time. If it was rough and jagged, then that would cause blood clots, and that would plug up the cardiovascular system. So the endocardium is really, really smooth. Endocardium makes up the chorda tendineae as well as the valve leaflets. So a healthy valve is what? A rough, jagged surface or a really smooth surface? It should be smooth because it's made out of endocardium. If it's diseased, if it had a bacterial infection or viral infection, it can get rough. And then it doesn't like to close, and it can form blood clots, and then that's a mess, right? Then that needs to be repaired or replaced. Okay, so those are the layers of the heart. Blood flow through the heart. Let's look at the blood flow. So let's go back to that original diagram that we were looking at, because it's got all the valves. They're not labeled, but you should label all the valves, the parts of the heart. What is this thing right here called between the left ventricle and right ventricle? This is the interventricular septum. Okay, so it's a big thick muscle because the left ventricle is really strong. All right, so I want you to be able to trace a drop of blood through both sides of the heart, through all four chambers and all four valves, and through how many circulations? pulmonary circulation and systemic circulation, so there are two circulations. So let's draw that on the board, okay, because I think that's a pre-lecture reading assignment even to do that. So where should we start with a drop of blood? Let's start by finding a marker that works. But what chamber? I think this is going to work okay. What chamber should we start with? Where would you like to start before we take a tour through the cardiovascular system?
Right atrium.
Right atrium. Sounds really good to me. All right, so you could look at that diagram right there, but you should have this picture in your mind, and you should be able to write it out just like I'm writing it on the blackboard right here. All right, so I'm going to put right atrium. That's where we're going to start. Right atrium. And what kind of blood is in the right atrium? Is it relatively high in oxygen or low in oxygen? Low in oxygen. So it's going to be blue colored, but I'm not going to put blue, and I don't have a blue marker, but I could do that. I'm just going to put a down arrow for oxygen. And what about carbon dioxide? Relatively high. So I'm going to put up a positive arrow, up arrow for CO2. That's the state of blood in the right atrium. Right atrium is going to contract. Where does blood flow? Over from the right atrium. Right ventricle, you're really close, but it's got to pass a structure first before it gets into the right ventricle, and that is the valve. And then we got to know the name of that valve, because all valves are different, right? You don't want to go open heart surgery and replace somebody's valve. And on the opposite side, then you got to rip that person's heart open again and replace it, and they're going to be really unhappy if you have to do that. Okay, so what's the name of this valve between the right atrium and the right ventricle? Tricuspid. Remember what? Try before you buy. Tricuspid. And what kind of valve is that? Atrioventricular. I don't have room on the board to write it, but that's an atrioventricular valve because it's between an atrium and a ventricle. What's the state of blood going through the tricuspid valve? Okay, low in oxygen, high in CO2, so I'm going to just put quotation marks right here, meaning it's the same information as the line above. From the tricuspid valve, what chamber does it go into? Same side of the heart or opposite side of the heart?
Same side.
Same side, so I'm going to say right. Okay, and right what? Ventricle. I'm going to abbreviate ventricle with a V because we don't want to spend all day at the board. And what's the state of blood in the right ventricle? Same. Low in oxygen, high in CO2. Right ventricle contracts. Where is it going to pump blood? Into the pulmonary trunk or pulmonary artery, but it's got to pass something first before it gets there. Pulmonary semilunar valve. Okay, so I'm going to actually spell this one out. I got to practice my spelling. Pulmonary trunk. Oh, no. Sorry. Semilunar valve, because it looks like half a moon, and I'm just going to abbreviate valve. What's the state of blood? Same, low in oxygen, high in CO2. After it passes the pulmonary semilunar valve, where does it find itself? Pulmonary trunk. And what kind of blood vessel is a pulmonary trunk? You'd think of it by the direction of blood flow. Artery. Yeah, pulmonary trunk is an artery, so I'm going to put artery here. And what's the state of blood in this artery? Tricky. It is in the pulmonary trunk, even though it's an artery, it is low in oxygen. All right, so I'm just going to put some more quotation marks right here. Low in oxygen. Write it out, maybe, so that you really appreciate that. Pulmonary trunk takes blood to where? The lungs, but I want to stick with the cardiovascular system, but there's a kind of blood vessel in the lungs. And it's on that slide right up over here. What kind of blood vessel? It's a special blood vessel in the lungs, and it's called a capillary. So I'm going to put pulmonary capillary here. Pulmonary capillary. And a pulmonary capillary is a special kind of blood vessel. It allows for a certain kind of function to take place. In one word. And you can use more than one word first to describe what's happening there. But exchange, yeah, just in one word, exchange. All right, so I'm going to put that in parentheses right here. Exchange takes place in a capillary in particular, right? All right, so what happens? Oxygen goes in and CO2 goes out in this capillary. So that's what I mean by exchange. So I'll put O2 in and CO2 goes out of the blood. That's because that's what happens in a capillary. It allows for exchange. Okay, then after a capillary, where does blood go? It goes back to the heart. What brings blood back to the heart? A vein. And what kind of vein is this if it's in the pulmonary circulation? It's the pulmonary vein. Indeed, it's the pulmonary vein. Now, this is kind of a strange vein. All right, let me get some ink flowing again. Pulmonary vein. And even though it's a vein, what kind of blood is in this vein? It is high in oxygen, low in CO2. So I'm going to flip this arrow around and put an up arrow for oxygen and put a down arrow for CO2. Okay, so here you have high oxygen, but it's a vein because it's going back to the heart. Let's go over to here. All right, pulmonary vein takes blood where? Back to the heart. What part of the heart? The left. Let's see if this one works better. Little bit. Left atrium. What's the state of blood in the left atrium? It's going to be high in oxygen, nice red color, right? So high O2. What about CO2? Low. Okay, left atrium is a little weak pump. It's going to pump some blood. Where does the blood have to go? It's got to pass a valve, an atrioventricular valve. And what valve is that? Yeah, so left, I'm going to say AV for atrioventricular valve. And in particular, this one on the left side of the heart, remember, try before you buy. This is the bicuspid, because how many cusps does it have? Two. Bicuspid, and what's another name for the bicuspid valve? Mitral valve. And what's the state of blood? High in oxygen. After the mitral valve, it goes into the LV, left ventricle. What's the state of blood? High in oxygen, low in CO2. Left ventricle pumps blood past a valve. What kind of valve? The aortic semilunar valve. Remember, it's a lot different than an atrioventricular valve. The structure is totally different. Semilunar, atrioventricular are totally different. Aortic semilunar valve, I abbreviated valve. What's the state of blood? Same, high in oxygen. After it passes the aortic semilunar valve, it goes into the aorta. What kind of blood vessel is the aorta? Aorta. Artery or vein? Artery, taking blood away from the heart. And it's nice because it's oxygenated blood, carries it to the systemic circulation. So the aorta delivers blood to another little functional group of blood vessels here that we call the systemic capillaries, different than the pulmonary capillaries in some sense, right? So systemic capillaries. What's the function of a capillary once again? I'm going to put that in parentheses, right? So exchange takes place. Now it's the opposite exchange compared to the pulmonary exchange. So what about oxygen? O2 goes which way? Goes out. And what goes in? CO2 goes in. And now we're almost done. We need just one more vessel. From these capillaries, systemic capillaries, it goes to where? Yeah, vena cava. Where do I want to put that? I put it right here. All right. Superior and inferior vena cava. What's the state of blood in the vena cava? Low in oxygen because it left in the systemic capillaries and high in CO2. And the vena cava then takes blood where? Exactly where we started, right here. So draw that out a couple times. Look at this really nice diagram that's in your textbook. Okay, and relate the colors to the different state of blood. And make sure you know the difference between an artery and a vein. And know all the chambers and all the valves. And all that is just critically important for everybody to know. Okay. So that's most of the anatomy of the heart. Okay, we've got a couple other things to talk about in terms of the heart. The coronary circulation. Coronary circulation delivers oxygenated blood to the heart because the heart is a muscle. It requires oxygen and nutrients. And there are some blood vessels that come off the ascending aorta in this region right here, actually inside the valve, the aortic semilunar valve. And those are what we call coronary arteries because they supply oxygenated blood to the heart so that it can live and pump blood. All right, so there's a right and left coronary artery. There are only two of them. Let's see if I can find where these are. They're sometimes kind of hard to see. Okay, so here's the aorta. There is one coronary artery that goes over to the right side of the heart. Here's the right coronary artery. And then there's one that comes over here to the left side of the heart, and that's called the left coronary artery. There are only two. Those are the first branches off of the aorta. And in particular, the ascending aorta are these little coronary blood vessels. When we get to here, there's a bifurcation. And you can probably see this, even though it's not really big on the screen, because you can see that nice red color in here. Here's a bifurcation, meaning the left coronary artery splits into two. It splits into one that's a circumflex artery that's in a sulcus between the atria and ventricle. So sometimes we call that the atrioventricular sulcus. Right? That's a circumflex artery. And then another important artery right here, this is called the left anterior descending coronary artery, or LAD. And sometimes it's called the anterior interventricular artery because it's between the left and right ventricles. It goes by a number of different names. Right? But I kind of like left anterior descending. People in hospitals like that name too, so you might as well get to know that one. And this is where we have a lot of disease in this particular blood vessel. Okay, in people, there's blockages in this left anterior descending artery which have to be cleared. Right? Because it's really unfortunate when this blood vessel gets damaged, because what side of the heart is it feeding? The left side of the heart. Which one requires more energy and more oxygen and nutrients? The left side of the heart. So small changes in this artery right here really have a detrimental effect on the heart because it's bringing oxygen and nutrients to the one of the more important sides of the heart, namely the left ventricle, because it supplies blood to the systemic circulation. Okay, so you got to know this one. Here's a marginal artery bringing blood to the right side, to the right ventricle. All right, but in lab you'll be able to see the rest of these vessels. We talked about all of these except for these at the top right here. And since this is an exam figure, let's go over these blood vessels coming off the arch of the aorta. All right, this is going to be more important when we get to the vessel chapter, but I think if we start now, that would be really good. Now, I see some strange things happening here. Okay, and that is, I see three blood vessels. And I would actually like to see four if there was nice symmetry in your body, right? Because if you have an arm on one side of your body, what do you got on the other? You got another arm. If you got an eyeball on one side, what do you got on the other? Okay, you got another eyeball. But with these blood vessels, we lose that symmetry. The left common carotid and the left subclavian bring blood to the left side of your body, and the brachiocephalic trunk brings blood to the right side of the body. So the job of the brachiocephalic is doing the job of the left common carotid and left subclavian. So what you have to remember is this first branch coming off is an artery that's doing two jobs, and we call it brachiocephalic. Brachio means what? To the arm. Cephalic means toward the head. Brachiocephalic is bringing blood to the head and to the arm on the right side of the body, which is exactly the job of the common carotid here, that brings blood to the left side of the head, and the subclavian brings blood to the left side of your arm, your upper appendage. Okay, so we kind of lose some symmetry right here. Subclavian means what? Underneath the clavicle bone. bringing blood to the left arm. Okay, so those are some, I'll mention these other veins, I think, in lab. It's easier to see them in lab. Okay, the fibrous skeleton of the heart is important to know something about. It lies in the plane between the two atria and the two ventricles, and it does not contain muscle. It contains connective tissue, dense regular connective tissue, kind of like a tendon or a ligament, so it's really, really tough. Muscle tissue can conduct electrical information. It can send signals. That's how it's signaled to contract. But connective tissue can't send electrical activity, right? And connective tissue also is very tough, right? This fibrous skeleton surrounds all four of the heart valves. All four of the valves are in this plane of the heart. And so that securely anchors the valves with inside the heart. When the heart contracts, these valves don't move around because they're connected to the fibrous skeleton of the heart. And so it anchors, so the functions of the fibrous skeleton, it anchors the valves in place. It prevents overdilation of the valve openings, because if a valve were to dilate, then it would become very leaky. The valve leaflets couldn't touch each other and blood would go in a reverse direction through the heart and kill the heart. And it's a point of insertion for the atria and ventricular muscle. Remember, muscles always have to have an insertion and an origin. So the fibrous skeleton acts as a really nice, strong insertion point for muscle. And it also electrically isolates the atria from the ventricles, because it's not muscle tissue, it's connective tissue. It acts as a layer of insulation between the atria and the ventricles. You're going to see why that's important in just a little bit. All right, so where is this fibrous skeleton? A superior view of the fibrous skeleton is shown on this slide. So here's the plane where all the valves are in. Here is the fibrous skeleton right here. All of the valves are anchored in it. Okay, another view is right here. All right, so here's the fibrous skeleton of the heart separating the atria from the ventricles. Okay, and what controls the heart is electrical activity. So we want to look at the conduction system of the heart, the electrical conduction system of the heart. We want to know the anatomy of the of this system here. So let me find a nice picture of the conduction system of the heart. Someplace. All right, here's the exam figure on the conduction system of the heart. All right, so I see the aorta, I see superior vena cava, here's the apex down over here, here's the interventricular septum. Some, what are these little muscles here? What are these little muscles called? Papillary muscles. I know we talked about a lot in lecture today, probably not on the tip of your tongue, but these are the papillary muscles, probably that rings a bell. On one end of a papillary muscle, you have the chorda tendineae that hold the atrioventricular valves in position. These gold areas, are they gold or green or yellow? Gold, really good, okay. So these gold areas right here are special myocardial cells. They're not nerve cells, these are muscle cells, but they're specialized not to contract, but to carry electrical information and to have special electrical properties. The first one I see is in this chamber right here. Where do I have the cursor? What chamber is this? The right atrium. This is what we call the sinoatrial node. Oh, it's not labeled on this diagram. Why is that? Maybe I need to go back to a previous slide. It's labeled on this diagram. Too complicated. But if you want to see where it's defined, go back to the previous slide. This is the sinoatrial node. The sinoatrial node is the pacemaker of the heart. It controls the heart rhythm. Your nervous system can influence the sinoatrial node, but even without innervation, the sinoatrial node will cause the heart to contract. So when you saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, what is that? That's maybe so long ago, you haven't even seen it now. What's Raiders of the Lost Ark? It's a movie, yeah, Indiana Jones, right? Where they rip somebody's heart out of somebody's chest and they put it on the temple, and what does the heart do? It just sits there and beats. And indeed, that's true. Your heart would do that because of the sinoatrial node will control the heart rate, even though it's not innervated and connected to your body. So that's why we call this the pacemaker. It sets up electrical signals that travel over all atria, both atria, pretty much simultaneously through these internodal pathways, and that electrical activity causes the atria to contract. Now, we said the fibrous skeleton, which is in this region right here, prevents electrical activity from going from an atria into a ventricle, right? But we want one way for electrical information to move from an atria into a ventricle, and it is through the atrial ventricular node. When it receives electrical information from the SA node, then it sends it through the AV bundle right here, which goes through the fibrous skeleton into the septum, interventricular septum, right? And then it bifurcates into what we call bundle branches. The bundle branches take electrical signals way down to the apex of the heart very rapidly, and then that electrical activity is spread throughout the heart through these little terminal branches that we call Purkinje fibers. Okay, so the AV bundle holds on to the electrical signal for a little bit. It's a delay. It delays the signal from entering the ventricle. So guess what? The atria contract first. The atria contract, pump blood into the ventricles. Then the electrical signal enters down through the bundle branches, and it causes the ventricles to contract in unison. So both atria contract first, followed by both ventricles contracting in unison. All right, so the conduction system is really, really important because it controls how the heart contracts. The atria should contract first, followed by both ventricles because of the conduction system of the heart. So what do you got right here? The nodal cells, you got the sinoatrial node, atrioventricular node right here. Okay, and then you have conducting cells. These are myocytes that conduct electrical information. The AV bundle, which is right here, then the right and left bundle branches, and then the Purkinje fibers. All right. The electrical signals travel slowly through the AV node, but very rapidly through the bundle branches, which means then that the apex of the heart here contracts first before the basal regions of the heart. And that makes really good sense, because how does blood leave a ventricle? Is it from this inferior part down by the apex, or by a superior part up by the base of the heart? It's by the base of the heart right here. So the apex contracts first, and it helps pump blood superiorly up into the pulmonary artery and the aorta. All right, so the apical regions contract first, pushing blood up instead of being pushing down. If somebody has a blockage in a blood vessel to the heart, then these conduction pathways are disturbed. And then the heart won't contract in its normal kind of rhythm. And the normal rhythm is what? Atria first, followed by both ventricles. And these gold pathways right here are muscle cells, as is the rest of the myocardium. These are muscle cells. The muscle cells can conduct electrical information. So if the conduction system is damaged, you might have electrical signals. Instead of going from the base to the apex, they might start to walk around the heart in a circular pattern. As these signals walk around the heart in a circular pattern, it's going to cause the heart to contract in various kinds of rings, all right, or in little pockets. So this part might contract first, then this part will contract, and then down over here might contract, and then over here will contract. And if there is an ununiform contraction of the heart, it's not going to pump blood. The heart's going to contract, but we call that fibrillation. When the heart is fibrillating, it's not pumping blood, so no blood goes to your brain or other parts of your body. And then, of course, that leads to death when that happens. So we call that ventricular fibrillation. No coordinated contraction because the synchronization is lost. And so the conduction system of the heart is real important because it maintains that nice synchronized distribution of electrical activity so that the atria contract first, followed by both ventricles together. It has to contract as a unit. All right, so that's good for today. Sign the sign-in sheet. And next time, what's happening next time? Yeah, you got an exam. Is the heart on the exam? It is not on the exam. It's on the last one. So what we covered today is not on the exam, but all the previous material is. And don't forget, Monday is a holiday. So no class on Monday.